This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, April the 16th. I'm Johnny Kane with Sportscaster.com. A really terrific program laid out for you tonight. You're going to meet a 10-year-old author who, rather than operating his own lemonade stand to make a few extra bucks, decided instead to write a book. Really cool kid whose name is George Latham IV, a published author still in grade school, mind you. We'll also dive into the college recruiting process for high school athletes. What does that look like in today's day and age? You know, a lot of big-time athletic programs are instead choosing the transfer portal route rather than offering scholarships to high school seniors. And now, with colleges able to offer more than simply scholarships or partial scholarships, there's a monetary component that high school athletes have to consider. And if you think about it, the true student athletes exist only at the high school level. It's an entirely different scene with how college athletics programs are being run. And that has a direct trickle-down effect to the high school level. We'll hear from a high school AD about the ever-changing landscape in amateur athletics. And fresh off Rory McIlroy's historic Masters win on Sunday, the world of golf is in a great place. A commentary from a high school golfer on the debate between golf being a sport or a skill. Plus, what makes a great sports announcer or a memorable catchphrase? Kevin Beers, longtime PA announcer, he will join the show later this hour. But we start here. I had the opportunity to meet a young man named George Latham IV at a Pistons game here a couple of weeks ago. He's only 10 years old. He's an author. I'll say it again. He is 10 years old. Sportscaster.com's Lyric Sloan, an aspiring sideline reporter who attends Michigan State, caught up with young George to talk about his new book. Lyric, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And what a kid, this boy. I mean, what a sweet kid to talk to.
I mean, he's inspirational. You don't come across a 10-year-old every day that wants to reach for the stars. I mean, he's going places, I'm telling you.
He is going places. I don't even remember what I was doing at 10 years old, but I don't think author was part of my bio. Here is Lyric Sloan from Michigan State University with 10-year-old author George Latham IV.
I'm with George Latham IV. So, wow, you are not the average 10-year-old at all. You just released your third book. Yes. It's called I Can Work in Sports.
Yes.
I love it.
Thank you.
So I read it. It's incredible. I mean, there's some information in there that I didn't even know. So you're only 10 years old and you're not the average 10-year-old. You're taking risks and putting yourself out there and getting extreme recognition. You've been on countless news stations and won so many different awards along with the 2023 Spirit of Detroit. What made you want to break this mold?
So my mom had asked me, like when I was 5, my mom asked me how I wanted to make my own money. She gave suggestions like a lemonade stand or to write a book. I chose to write a book because I love to read and I love to inspire others to read.
We know that you love sports. And you love to watch sports, you love to play sports. What's your favorite sport to watch and play?
To watch and play is basketball. And I love basketball because I love the Detroit Pistons.
So let's say you're getting in the mode to write your books. What do you do to get in your game mode? Obviously, when you're an athlete, you have to get solid in your mind and stay steady and focused. So what do you do when you write your book? Do you go in a quiet place, listen to music?
Most of the time, I just go in a quiet place. And I like maybe some music sometimes, but I do like sitting in a quiet place. I'm locked in. I have my eyes on the paper the whole time.
So if you could have any athlete or someone famous read your book and give you advice, who would it be?
LeBron, because he's also an author.
You guys could definitely collaborate on that. LeBron is so cool too. You've had so many surreal moments throughout your whole career. What was the moment for you that you couldn't believe that this was happening? Like, is this real life?
When I met Kate Cunningham, when he was walking through the tunnel.
So you play for the Pistons Academies in the summer, right?
Yes.
How did you get involved with this?
It first started off with me writing my second book after I released it. Somebody that my mom went to college to, his name is Chris Economus. And he kind of wanted me to get involved, like to collaborate, to make a book. And then once the Pistons actually saw, they wanted me to come to Pistons Academy because they knew I played basketball. The coaches were very nice. The team was very nice. They were mature too. Everything was just great when that happened.
I know that you said that you'd want LeBron to read your book, but who are some people that inspire you?
My parents, mostly my mom, because she's the one who actually got me into this business. My dad, he's the one who helped me with like most of the information.
What's been your favorite project to work on? You've written 3 books now. So what's been your favorite?
I can work in sports because it's collaboration with the Detroit Pistons, and it's the latest book, my 3rd book too. And I released it on Hooper's birthday, March 23rd. So that's a good thing.
George, thank you so much for this interview. You were amazing.
No, thank you for having me on this interview. This is very special for me, and this is a very special opportunity for me. Thank you. And thanks for actually buying the book.
So if people want to reach you or purchase your books, where can they find those things?
They can find my books at my website, www.georgelathamiv.com/shop. And my Instagram is biddyg4. And you might as well have a blessed day.
And you might as well have a blessed day. What a kid, what a story. I got a couple of signed copies for my godsons. You know, it's good to remember, dream big. Never too late to write your memoirs. Never too early to become a published author like young George. I'd venture a guess that many of you listening tonight played sports in high school. I think the national average shows a little more than a third of high school students in the U.S. played high school sports. Ethan Pavey's a sophomore at Groves High School in Beverly Hills, Michigan. Ethan also plays baseball, plays basketball, and he interviewed his high school's athletic director about the recruiting process and what that looks like for high school athletes. Ethan Pavey, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you guys.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So Groves High School, Wiley E. Groves High School, how big's your school?
We have about 1,200 kids in the whole school, 400 per graduating class.
Okay.
So it's not the biggest, it's not the smallest.
That's a good way to put it. So it's about 4 times the size of my high school. Do you hope to play sports in college?
I think every kid dreams of that, but I think reality has hit me that that will not be taking place.
You still got time.
If it happens, I would be very happy, but I'm not expecting anything big.
So do most athletes in your school, do they have to put their own highlight tapes together or do you guys get help?
Most of the time we do have to put our highlight tapes together, but some of us do, some of us don't. And our athletic director is a huge help to that process of getting noticed by colleges. We actually have some students that are getting into photography and videoing and taking photos at the games and are putting together those videos for the athletes. So it's kind of a cool time at Groves.
Yeah, that's perfect. And your AD, Ross Gauthier, he's a guy who knows what he's doing. So what stood out to you in your interview with Mr. Gauthier?
Just like the whole process behind recruiting, all of us sit on our couch on that Saturday and watch that football game. We don't really know how they got to that point, either if it's through the transfer portal or just getting straight up recruited to the Big Ten. So it's really interesting seeing behind the scenes and the steps and how the school takes place in those steps to getting to the big stage and getting to where those players are today.
Very good. Here's Ethan Pavey with Groves High School AD, Ross Gauthier.
Today we are talking about something every high school athlete wonders about, getting to play at the next level and how high school recruiting works. Joining me is our very own athletic director, Ross Gauthier, who is the athletic director at Groves High School near Detroit. Mr. G is in a position to help student athletes navigate this process. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Ethan.
Let's start with the basics. So for student athletes who aren't really sure what to expect about recruiting, can you explain a little bit about the college recruitment process and what it looks like?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on what level they are. I'm sure you've seen a lot, especially with the NCAA tournament with men's basketball. You're hearing a lot about the transfer portal and who's going where. And I think it's probably a tougher landscape today for our high school athletes to go on to play to college than it's ever been, just because of a lot of colleges at the topper levels recruiting mostly other college players. So that makes it difficult. The big thing is we play in the OAA, one of the top conferences in the state. We have a very good platform for our student athletes here. So when our teams do well, you know, the individual success usually follows the team success, depending on the sport. If you're playing travel, getting out in front of coaches, doing that. And then the other thing is it's networking, whether it's you and your parents and your coach, sometimes even myself, working together, identifying what colleges you're interested in, what level do you think you want to play at and can play at, what college has your program, your degree, and then looking at those things of like what college is going to make you the best version of yourself you can be. Once you kind of have like a decent idea of what you're looking for, once you kind of narrow down that process, that's usually a big thing. And just trying to get meetings, whether it's open gyms, open workouts, unofficial visits, trying to get those things going.
That was really helpful. Thank you. And so when do you think these student athletes should really start thinking about their recruitment? And what do you think that timeline should look like?
You know, it's never really too late. Obviously, the earlier, the better. I mean, I think if you're playing high-level travel sport, whether, you know, it's soccer or basketball or pick a sport, volleyball, if you're playing, like, high-level travel, you know, those coaches are starting to identify the top of the top, you know, early on in their high school career, in that sophomore year, then you usually things really kind of pick up across, like, all levels, you know, that junior year, senior year, you know, the end of your junior kind of going into your senior year is kind of a sweet spot where a lot of kids pick, you know, most kids pick up some interest and offers and roster spots.
Nice. And so you talked about like emailing coaches and getting that like first interaction. So what else besides playing well, what else can athletes do to start getting on those coaches' radar?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head without saying. You said students. What can student athletes do? And the better student you are, the more opportunities you have to play at the next level. So I think being a great student is one of the most important things. College coaches, they have an eye for talent. They're going to be able to watch your film or see you play. They're going to be able to tell if you can play or not. So really, like, when they talk to athletic directors or they talk to, like, coaches, they're like, what kind of teammate is he? How is he in the classroom? What are his grades? What are his parents like? So first part is being a student first and an athlete second opens up a lot more doors. Just getting your name out there, attending, you know, exposure camps. Like if you, you know, you really want to go to a certain college or university, look and see. They all have some type of summer camp, you know, or off-season camp that is open. You got to pay, but, you know, it's an opportunity to be in front of their coaches and then get a chance to see you. So I think that's another good way to do that. You got to be a student first, because if you don't have the grades, you're not going to be able to play. So that student-athlete piece, even in today's NIL world, is still very important.
I play a couple sports. I play basketball and baseball. And while I'm playing and during practice, after practice, I see my teammates editing these videos of like all their highlights. Do those actually help get college interest, or are they just whatever?
I'm a one, and, you know, you say whatever. Are they fun? Yeah, you know, it's fun. Post it on TikTok or whatever, and, you know, and kids, I'd say the last 10 years or so are spoiled with the different apps and platforms that are out there where you can coach uploads all your games and you can edit all your games to make your own highlight, which is really cool. But I think having those highlight tapes, you get a link, you can send them out to coaches. Coach likes what he sees. He's going to say, hey, will you send me a full game? You know, or he might say, hey, thanks, appreciate it. You know, you never know. Every coach is looking for something a little different. I think it helps doing those highlight tapes. And worst case scenario, they're a good keepsake, you know, to show your family when you're older. You know what I mean? So, but I do think they help. I have helped our student athletes occasionally send those out to coaches, and I've sent them on behalf. So I definitely think they help. It's a good starter piece, you know, to put out on social media and reach out to coaches for sure.
You've been dealing with the recruitment process a lot with a bunch of our student athletes here at Groves. So what are the common mistakes or myths that you come across throughout this recruiting process that some people believe to be true?
That's a great question. I don't want to say probably the biggest myth, you know, is just like, you know, like, is I just got to be seen, you know, like I need it. Like if you're good enough, they'll find you. You know, if you put you're putting your stuff out there, you're emailing coaches, there's things you can do. You know, I don't care what school you go to, high school. If you're good enough, they're going to find you. That's probably like the biggest myth. Like, I got to go to X school so I can get recruited to play. I've worked at small schools with 400 kids and seen kids go Big Ten. You know, so if you're good enough, they're going to find you. That's probably the biggest myth. As far as mistakes, I mean, I would just say keep your options open, especially early in the process. You don't want to be telling people no. because you're not sure how it's going to play out. So that's probably the biggest thing, is keep your options open. If you have interest from schools, I would just hesitate from telling people, like, you know, no right away. You know, that'd probably be the biggest thing.
Do you have a favorite story of a student who has made it to the next level that you can share?
That is a great question. Probably my favorite story that I've had throughout my career is just going and seeing them play at the college level. And I had a young lady who plays soccer at Michigan State, going out to East Lansing and watching her play women's soccer at the Big Ten level for one of the top teams in the country. I mean, it's just incredible. She's just an incredible person, and seeing all her hard work pay off, you know, like, it's just amazing to see kids strive for something and achieve their goals and compete at one of the highest levels. It's cool, and I enjoy it.
A lot of these student athletes think that if their team goes further in the playoffs, they get seen more. What would you tell a student athlete that didn't go far in the playoffs but still wants to go to a D1, D2 school?
I definitely, you know, there's a little bit of truth in that, you know, just from the standpoint of, like, the higher stake of the game, the more eyes that are on you. But, like, in today's world, every game's videotaped. You can log on to any network and, you know, the NFHS network and watch games. So I don't think it matters as much as it used to. Like, if you're good enough, they're going to find you. Is it cool to play in, you know, those big games and big environments? Absolutely. But, you know, I think regardless, if you have the skill and the talent and you're what they're looking for, there's enough avenues now in today's world, they're going to find you.
Thank you so much for sharing your time and advice with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking me, and looking forward to seeing you in the hallway and on the baseball diamond here soon.
Thank you.
Really good interview from Ethan Pavey, high school student from Groves High School, wants to study broadcast journalism in college, and really good information from Groves AD Ross Gauthier. On the heels of the Masters tournament concluding earlier this week, we turn our attention to golf. Brendan Mato, senior at Detroit Catholic Central High School in Novi, varsity golfer and the lead student broadcaster for Detroit CC Athletics. It's good to have you back. Hey, I want to tell you a quick story here. So it was my first time ever interviewing Tom Watson, 8-time major winner, 2-time Masters champ. I was nervous, and I usually don't get too nervous, but I walk up to Tom, and Tom extends his right hand, looks me dead in the eyes, and he says, "Can you break 80?
No way.
That was the first thing he ever said to me. So, you know, I mutter out, I'm like, "Yes." And he said, "Okay, good, I'm Tom." And I think at that point in time in my life, I'd broken 80 like one time, and it might have been fluky, and I might have had a mulligan. So let me ask you, can you break 80?
Pretty much the same thing as you, Johnny. I might have done it once, like 79.
That's what mine was too, 79. Yeah. All right, so what's your current handicap?
Right now I'm playing off like 11 or 12.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, low 80s. Yeah.
You can get around, of course, pretty good. All right, in a nutshell, what is your commentary on golf about?
Golf is kind of in a weird spot right now because there was a huge division and the giant divide between LIV and the PGA Tour. Now I feel like that's kind of just in the past. Nobody really cares to think about that anymore. It kind of just is. But realistically, with the majors and the Ryder Cup opening up to the LIV players, of course, the Masters has the past champion rule, all that sort of thing. I think it's just on the back burner. Nobody's really worried about it anymore. But what I do like to think about is guys like Bryson DeChambeau, who are tearing it up. He won the U.S. Open last year. Brooks Koepka got second to Jon Rahm in the Masters the previous year. I'd love to know what these guys would be capable of should they still be on the PGA Tour being watched by thousands of people rather than doing these LIV tournaments, making a ton of money. But overall, I think golf is in a good spot. There's lots of talent.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about golf and when we watch golf, we say the sport of golf, right? But the question is it a skill? Is it a sport? And so in your opinion, was it as interesting as you thought it would be as far as what goes into defining this particular element like golf? Why it's such a, I wouldn't say it's like a hot button issue, but why there's a discernment between golf potentially not being considered a sport?
Yeah, it was interesting to kind of hear how people looked at me when I asked them the question.
Yeah.
Because some guys, like my coach, looked at me and he's like, "Dude, is it a sport? You got to throw that whole question out because like, yes." And then there's other guys that just play recreationally on the weekends. And they're like, "I'm not like competing. Like we're not on the PGA Tour here. I have golf clubs and I swing it around. That's a hobby, you know?" So yeah, it was interesting to see how people really just took in the question when I asked it to them.
Brendan Mado, on the commentary of golf, a skill or a sport? Let's listen.
Is golf a sport? You may have strong opinions on this, may have never even considered the question, but it's a question that I think a lot of people would disagree about once you start to think about it. I'm on Detroit Catholic Central's golf team, so I have my opinions, but let's get to those later. I spoke with some people this week and dove into the question, is golf a sport or is it a skill?
I spoke with one of my coaches at CC, Coach Dirks, about what he thinks. And he said that it's really about how you define the term sport. He said it kind of dives into an ego thing, right? What sport is popular and what looks good on video? What do people like to watch? But realistically, with those four attributes, physical toughness, mental toughness, mental strategy, and a bit of technical skill, you could get all the way down to chess considered a sport.
So let's analyze both sides of the argument, starting with, yes, golf is a sport, not just a skill. While golf is slower than most other sports, the mental demand partnered with the intense physical and technical strength needed to succeed makes golf just as demanding as any other competitive sport you see on TV. Take a look at guys like Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, or Tiger Woods. These guys are buff, and it clearly shows for something, as three guys alone hoist 24 major championship trophies among them. Endurance, also a huge skill that golfers use, as they're walking 18 holes in 90-degree weather 4 days in a row. That's not even including stepping up and swinging a golf club. So no, golf may not look like a real sport, since no one is running, tackling, dunking, etc. And while most general applications of golf see it as an individual game rather than a team competition, it still demands the same, if not more, physical and mental strength than any of those other sports. Hey, golf is part of the Olympics now, which I guess doesn't exactly mean much since last year featured breakdancing, but it's still worth something. This week, I spoke with Matthew Krakowiak, a fellow senior on Detroit Catholic Central's golf team, about his view of golf as a sport.
Yeah, I would say it's both. You know, you're always competing against the course and yourself, trying to minimize bad mistakes, bad breaks. I forget who said it. It might have been Ben Hogan, but he said that, you know, golf is a game of misses. And, you know, golf just requires a lot of focus and endurance and trying to constantly keep your composure under pressure, just like all sports are. But then from the skill side, it's really technical. Things like chipping and putting really have to have, you know, fine motor skills for that. Those take a ton of practice. They require a lot of finesse. And it takes a lot of repetition, practice, years and years to get those good.
So now to play devil's advocate. Whenever I tell someone, yeah, I play golf, I'm almost always met with, oh, cool, something you can play for the rest of your life. This is true, but it also says something about the game of golf itself. You can't play basketball or football for the rest of your life. You can't run and tackle or shoot and defend when you're 80. You can play golf, though. So really, is it on the same level as these sports? I asked my friend Benny Fagarcy, who plays golf recreationally, why he thinks golf is more so a skill.
Benny, you're more on the recreational side of golfers, right? So I'd have to assume that you'd think golf is more so a skill. Is that true?
Brendan, that's a great question. I believe golf is more of a skill to have rather than a competitive sport. Although it can be competitive, I believe it's more on the skill side.
Okay, so you kind of alluded to it a little bit.
Right.
Right. It could be a sport. Do you think that's true?
Of course I think that's true. There's always a competitive sport and competitive nature, per se, in any sport you play in. And whether or not you believe golf's a sport or not, there's always going to be a competitive aspect to it, whether or not you're playing with a bunch of friends or against another teammate. But I believe that's how golf is brought up to be, more playing for fun.
All right, so to wrap it all up, what do I think? To me, golf is as much of a sport as you make it. I think it's important to recognize the mechanics of golf require skill, but the physical and mental demands, as well as the need for strategy on the course, make golf as a whole greater than just a skill. Especially playing in a competitive sense, like I do in high school, with multiple day tournaments, walking while carrying a bag, the teams, and like I mentioned, the strategy, mental and physical strength makes golf a sport. But just having golf clubs and a swing, playing 18 on Sunday with your buddies and having a hot dog at the turn, you might want to consider it more of a skill or even just a hobby. But when you think about it, you've got physical mechanics, mental strategy, precision under pressure. It may not leave you gasping for breath, but it can sure leave you emotionally shattered. And isn't that what we all love and find in true sports? It's without a doubt that whether you're walking the course with a caddy or riding in a cart, whether you're 18 or 80, golf takes serious discipline, and that counts for something. In my honest opinion, I'd have to say golf is a bit more than just a skill. This certainly doesn't mark the end of this debate. We want to hear your opinions too. Find us on social media or make a channel on sportscaster.com and let us know what you think. Is golf on the same level as basketball or football? Or is it just an excuse to get outside and wear exotic polo shirts and khakis?
Brendan Mato from Detroit CC, terrific commentary, and it does make you think. If you've ever been to a sporting event at any level, whether that be high school or the pros, there is a constant voice inside the building, played over the speakers, letting you know what's going on. That's the voice of the public address announcer, or as we in the business call it, the PA announcer. And there are some voices that are more memorable than others. I've been covering Detroit Pistons basketball for more than a decade now, and the Pistons really are blessed with one of the best PA announcers in the game. His name's John Mason, and he's the guy who came up with the iconic phrase, Detroit basketball. It's an unmistakable voice. Really invites the audience, the fans, to participate in his calls. And just down the road from where the Palace once stood is another great PA announcer from Oakland University named Kevin Beers, and he sat down with sportscaster.com's Giovanni Moscheri. Giovanni, a recent graduate of Oakland U. He's done PA announcing and play-by-play, both the high school and collegiate level himself. Giovanni, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Johnny.
Kevin Beers is the voice of the Golden Grizz. You know him. What'd you guys talk about?
So I talked about how he got to Oakland. This wasn't the first time I've interviewed Kevin before. I wanted to know what goes through his mind during a game. What's he trying to consider when his voice goes up and down, how he's listening to the crowd? I wanted to know the mechanics of how he does his job because he does it so well.
He does do it so well. You know, I think a lot of us, when we're coming up through the ranks, it's like, you know, hey, I got to have a calling card or I need a catchphrase. And sometimes it can feel forced, if we're being honest, right? You're trying to force something in that may not fit. What is it that you think that has allowed Kevin to kind of etch out his own place?
So for him, definitely his signature call of that's traveling and you can't do that. That became his calling card about 2 years into his time at Oakland. He tells me it was just random on a whim, but that definitely, it stuck. And he listened to the crowd. He felt the buzz. And for him, he's just so attentive. He's listening so closely to the crowd that he knows what's working, what's not working. And all that energy, it's just natural. He's the same guy on and off the mic.
Yeah, be authentic, be genuine, and Kevin Beers does that. Here is Giovanni Moscheri with longtime PA voice of the Oakland Golden Grizz, Kevin Beers.
Welcome in, everybody. Now, my guest today, if you're a fan of Oakland University, should sound very, very familiar. For the past 20 years, he has been the voice filling the arena with all kinds of energy at every home game as the public address announcer with a heart as big as his voice. Kevin Beers joins me today. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great, Giovanni. I appreciate the offer to be here.
I've done just a little bit of public address, so I kind of get a sense of like what the cues are from the audience and kind of what they need, what's a good time. For you at Oakland specifically, how did you know what you were doing was working? And then that's kind of became your foundation. How did you kind of establish that familiarity with the crowd like that?
Honestly, it was just paying attention to contextual clues and reactions. And, you know, as you know, you can only hear about maybe six people behind you and what their reactions are. So I put a lot on that six that I can hear. And when they say, that's pretty cool, or did you hear him or whatever, then I know, I figure I've got something because I figured they're not alone. If they enjoyed it, likely they're pretty representative of the whole audience. And so we just go with it. Other times, if it's really good, then I can hear laughter or cheering or chuckling or even a buzz. Like after the first time I said, and you can't do that. there was a legitimate buzz in the audience. And one of the assistant athletic directors came running over and said, Beersy, you've got to keep doing that. Everybody's talking about it. Keep saying that. And so that one was pretty obvious.
I do want to keep talking about that, especially the you can't do that. It's your calling card. It's, you know, and the chant afterwards is just, it spreads throughout college sports. Give us the origin story of That's Traveling and You Can't Do That.
Yeah, it's a good story. I think it was a February game in 2006 or 2007. It goes that far back. I had started the season just, you know, looking for something cute and different and fun. And so I was saying, that's traveling, when the opponent traveled, okay? And just stopping at that. And I thought, yeah, okay, I dig that. Everybody seems to kind of like that. And it sounds, you know, fun, and it's a little bit different and everything. So I kept doing that. And then late in the season, Oakland had a home game, and I was the announcer, of course, and we were playing Valparaiso, which was our absolute gold standard nemesis of the day. And we hadn't beaten them in like 13 or 15 or 16 straight games. And we finally had a chance. It was late in the second half and at a critical time in the game with Oakland with a very slight lead at the time, a Valpo player got called for traveling. And so I went in, I pushed the mic, and I said, that's traveling. And then out of nowhere, no pre-thought whatsoever. I couldn't have stopped it if I tried, but I couldn't try because I had no clue. I honestly had no control over this whatsoever. My lips opened again and out came, and you can't do that. And the crowd instantly buzzed. And I couldn't believe it. I thought, what on earth? Where the heck did that come from? And the crowd was buzzing. So that's the origin of it. So then the fast forward to the next season, G, and you know the pep band at Oakland, they drive the show. And so somebody, one of their guys, decided, you know what, we're going to do a follow-up chant to That's Traveling and You Can't Do That. And so that's where the You Can't Do That, that started. I had nothing to do with that other than, I mean, they wouldn't have come up with that probably had I not happened to blurt out and you can't do that. But that's the synergy, and the rest is history. It's literally iconic now.
It's one of my favorite parts of going to Oakland games.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And you can't go to a high school basketball game in this area without that chant being done by the student section and everything. It's really, really cool.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Kevin Beers, the 20-year public address announcer at Oakland University, about his experience as the PA announcer behind the microphone. In one moment I wanted to zone in on, or rather a time period, during COVID, unfortunately that arena was ruled to be empty for many of those home games and you didn't have that kind of crowd interaction. How is it announcing to an empty arena, especially when there's that looming, you know, sense during COVID that everyone had? What was that experience like?
It was weird. That's a great question, G. I've not talked about this much because the PA announcer, I mean, his or her job is to fire up the crowd in some way, right? So they approached me and said, Kev, we want you to do your thing, because we want to try to create as much or at least close to any kind of normal situation for our student athletes as we possibly can. So we want you in front of that mic and we want you doing your thing. Do all of it. We want our student athletes to have as normal of an experience as we possibly can. But I really respected and admired that. And I was all too happy to do it. So it really wasn't a stretch for me to do it with no crowd.
And then one final question, a kind of different twist as to the crowd's involvement in it. But what about when the game, it's just not going well and you could tell the home crowd is disappointed. And I know you're a sports fan and you feel it too. When it comes to those situations, do you feel the need to kind of compensate for it to get the audience's energy up? Or do you keep it the same and just let the game speak for itself? How do you play to a bummed out crowd?
So I try to keep it just the same. I'm not going to sit here and say I have never lost energy because of a blowout or whatever. I think it's impossible to say that. So I'm sure there is a slight drop. I'm very, very conscious of it. And I'll tell you what really motivates me. It might have been Joe Dumars or Michael Jordan or somebody. I remember a basketball player saying, somebody is coming to their first Pistons game or Bulls game or whatever it is. There are people in the seats tonight that are here for the first time ever. And that player, which whoever it was, said, I take that very, very seriously. And I want to give them what they deserve because they've paid a lot of money to be here for that game. And so that really stuck with me and really resonates to this day. So I picture that kid to really have a good experience. And so if I can help with that, then I'm going to help with that.
Well, Kevin, thank you for joining us and thank you for rocking that microphone.
Maintaining energy throughout a game, regardless of the time, score, momentum, and then allowing a catchphrase to come organically, not forcing it. All important takeaways from that. It's a great responsibility to be on the mic, to serve the viewers or the listeners. And Kevin Beers does it well for Oakland University inside the O-Arena. I want to thank all our guests today. If you want to hear more from any of our guests, be sure to follow Sportscaster on the various social media platforms. You'll find clips from this week's show and previous shows of Open Mic. If you want to be a part of it all, simply log on to sportscaster.com. You can create your own profile and begin uploading your own creative content and perhaps be on our next show. And I'll leave you with this quote from author and public speaker Jim Rohn, who once said, if you really want to do something, you'll find a way. If you don't, you'll find an excuse. We'll see you right back here at 8 o'clock on Open Mic, where we center our focus on the Detroit Lions and the options available in the upcoming NFL draft. That'll be next Wednesday. I'm Johnny Kane on WJR.